Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the annual Golden State Guide Dog Handlers program, which always occurs every spring along with the CCB annual convention. We're delighted that everybody's here and we hope people continue to come in. Whether you have a dog, love dogs, or interested in guide dogs, had a guide dog, even if you are a dog, especially if you are a dog, you are most welcome. And my name is Susan Glass. I'll be moderating the meeting with the capable help of Steve Bauer. And I have a few housekeeping details to go over before we begin our program. First of all, please, if everyone could stay muted and raise your hands if you have questions. We will have specific times for questions. And because we're keeping to our hour and a half format, when our speaker, Linda McLeod, begins, we would like her to speak for her first 20-minute segment, then we'll pause for questions, and then she'll move on to her second segment. So if everyone could please remain muted, that would be helpful. Secondly, this program is being recorded, so you will be able to access it later, and it will be on our website. Thirdly, if you have not renewed your membership to Golden State Guide Dog Handlers, or would like to, we hope you'd love to. The annual membership is $20 a year. We do have scholarships available for anyone who needs one. We will also have three door prize drawings, excuse me, during the course of the afternoon, before and in the middle and at the end of the program. If you have questions or interest in Golden State Guide Dog Handlers, Inc., please email goldenstategoghandlers@gmail.com. That's goldenstateguidedoghandlers@gmail.com. And that, I believe, is the main part of our announcements. I think that what we decided to do so that we can maximize our time is Steve Bauer, my partner in crime here, or not crime, depending. If you could just tell us who we have on the call before we move forward, that would be wonderful. And then I'll be asking our esteemed president to say a few words. Okay, so Steve, please do us the honors. Tell us who's with us today.
Okay. We have Susan Glass, Vita, Allie Love, Brandon, Connie Skeen, David Jackson, Deborah Armstrong, Diane Harms, I assume that's Donna Pomerantz, Frank Welty, Grace, Jamie, Marilyn, Nellie, Nick, Nicolette, Pamela, Patricia, Ray, Robert, Charlene, Tony, Vivian, Annie, Linda Johnson, and Nancy, Roger, and area code 914.
Excellent turnout. Thank you, Steve. This is great. Wonderful. All right. Well, I would now like to pass the baton to our treasurer, Vita Zavalli, and she will begin our first or launch our first door prize drawing.
Could we find out who 914 is so we can put them on the list for a door prize?
Good thought.
If you want to unmute and tell us who you are.
Hi. Yes, hi, it's Donna.
Donna, what's your last name?
Venuti, Venuti.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Excellent. So, as you were coming in, I was giving everyone a number, and we are going to ask our wonderful
And 12, two,
A
one, three
lady.
has come in, just so you know. Two,
I'm
one, three.
sorry.
Thank you.
Who just came in?
Who just came in, Bob?
I heard 213. That's all I heard of it. If they're not interested, we can ask who they are, but sorry. Okay.
This is Shirley. I came in.
Thank you, Shirley. All right. So first of all, as Susan mentioned, I'm the treasurer for GSGDHI. If one more time, if you have any questions, you can write to Golden State Guide Dog Handlers at gmail.com. And our dues are only $20 per year. So feel free to join us. We have a great list where we answer each other's questions and talk about all kinds of things like what's the best vacuum cleaner and all kinds of interesting things. I think our last conversation was, do you let your dog sleep on your bed? So, good place to get information as well as put out your ideas that others can respond to. All right, let's ask our A lady, and of course, mine is named the Z. Ziggy, give me a number between 1 and 30. All right, so the number was 23. And that is David Jackson. All right, David. So, David, you'll have your choice of a $25 either Amazon gift card or Chewy. So, you can either just send me a quick note, let me know. That would be great. Who just came in, please, so we can add you to the list?
It's Marilyn.
Oh, it's okay, Marilyn. She came back in. You were here before, right? Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Susan, thank you.
Well, thank you, Vita. And Vita will be back at least twice more. So stay tuned. Mr. Bob Acosta, our dear president, would you please say a few words?
Yes, thank you so very much. On March 15th of this year, a great honor was paid to me, and it changed my life completely, and it's been a great ride so far. Yes, I'm the newly elected president of Golden State Guide Dog Handlers, Inc. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the oldest blind consumer organization of guide dog handlers in California. We started in 1977. I was the president of the California Council, and we started them off with $2,000, and they were on their way. It's a terrific organization. We pass great legislation, we believe. But mostly, we call ourselves the pack because we are family. Because the problems of one blind person with his dog is the problem of us all, and we all rally round. And I hope somewhere along the way, and I'll do it now if I may. Let's take a silent moment for our Vice President, Nancy Pryor, who lost her father this weekend, and that's really tough. So let's give it a few seconds, please. Amen. Thank you very much. So what I want to say is we've gone kind of easy on our committees because many of us are involved with the convention. We're going to have the greatest convention that we've ever had. It's terrific. We're looking forward to an in-person convention next year. But once we get past the convention, our committees will be off and running. And finally, I'll say one of our greatest committees is the program committee, which does a fabulous job. Oh, one more thing. The soul of this organization is advocacy, being an advocate. That's how we're tested. That's what a member says. What have you done? What can you do for me? Well, we are here. We're going to hear about advocacy from a wonderful speaker. Thank you, Susan, and let's move forward with the program.
All right, thank you, Bob. And indeed, that's the perfectly as a segue into what we're talking about today. So, what is advocacy? Where does it begin? How do we do it? Can anyone do it? Our speaker, Linda McLeod, is here to help make us comfortable with that idea and orient us to what advocacy is. Linda is a retired attorney who practiced litigation in areas of personal injury, probate, employment, and business law. She retired 10 years ago after suffering significant vision loss from Usher's syndrome. She and her first guide dog, Gideon, reside in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she is here to speak to us about how to advocate, what it means to advocate, how we can become advocates. Linda, welcome, and I will give you your 5-minute mark, but you've got your 20 minutes here, so welcome.
Thank you, everybody. I'm so honored to be here and be a part of this program, be a part of the this, is it a chapter or affiliate? I'm still not clear
we are
on
an
the ACB
we're
organizational chart.
Yeah, we're affiliate.
All right. So in any event, I am very, very happy to be here, and I'm going to get started on the program. And I'm really going to try to focus on sort of practical tips on how to get comfortable, how to get started, some things that you can do to advocate for yourself. And I'm going to start with a definition. And the definition is, what is self-advocacy? And self-advocacy really is identifying your needs, communicating them clearly, and helping others learn how to support you. Those are the three major elements that I see for self-advocacy. And there's also other types of advocacy. There's professional advocacy, there's collective advocacy, there's many different types of advocacy. We're going to talk mostly about self-advocacy, and I'll try to intersperse some examples that I've had recently. So the first thing in terms of learning to be comfortable with advocacy is to build your knowledge and your networks. Okay, so you're going to build your advocacy resources by building your knowledge and your networks. In terms of building your knowledge, I'm going to throw out a few good sources of information, and it's just broad-based kind of information that I find actually quite good. One source of information that focuses on guide dogs that I discovered is called the Seeing Eye Advocacy App. And if you type TSE advocacy in your Apple app search bar, you will come up with this app. It'll be in the resources. And this app provides federal and state laws for guide dog handlers. So you can, it's really cool. It's got federal laws, and then it's got the state laws listed by state. So if you're in Colorado and you need to learn about guide dog laws, you just go there. And it's actually quite good. And I, as an attorney, have used it several times. Another good source of laws is the ACB advocacy website. Many of you know they have an entire advocacy group. Claire Stanley is an amazing advocate. She heads that up. And oftentimes when I hit a dead end, I will email them at advocacy@acb.org, and many, many times they will have contacts, and we'll just be discovering discussing contacts, the importance of having them. Oftentimes you can get an additional contact that ACB may have that you were not aware of. A third great resource tends to be your guide dog handler network or school. I meant school. My school with Gideon was Guide Dogs for the Blind. Guide Dogs for the Blind has really tried to start focusing a lot more on advocacy in the last year or so. They've hired someone who is their client engagement and advocacy manager, Kirsten French. She's a friend of mine. She's really good. They have built up their advocacy web page. It has a lot of great resources on rideshare denials, healthcare issues, housing issues, transportation issues. So a very, very good resource there. And you can always get emotional support and additional resources when you call their support centers. So, and again, these resources are all going to be in your in the list of resources that we're going to provide in writing. So that's building your knowledge. The next part, and this is so important, and I think it's just one of the top things you need to do, is to build your network of people. And what does that mean? It means oftentimes advocacy and successful advocacy depends on finding the exact right person who is going to be able to help you with the issue. Now, I acknowledge that oftentimes there isn't a right person. Like, for example, I don't think Facebook has any way of actually emailing someone directly about an accessibility issue or something like that. You generally have to go through maybe their social media post or their social or their app to get to submit sort of a general complaint. But that is just one small element of inaccessible or not being able to come up with an actual person. In most areas, you're going to be able to find an actual person. And so every single time you have a problem and you start going through the system, you need to be including that person's name, title, email, and phone number in your contacts. Just put it in there and put a good search term in there so that when you need to go back and, maybe it's a Stanford healthcare client engagement specialist, you're going to type in the word Stanford support or Stanford help or something, and you'll be able to find that person right away. And why is this important? Because when you're in an emotional situation and you're upset and angry, you don't want to be spending a lot of time trying to find the person that you need to communicate with, especially if you've done this before. A good way too of getting a contact is to get the contact person before an issue comes up. So, for example, a good example of this is maybe you are going to a new doctor, okay? And before an issue comes up, you can ask them, hey, look, I have a guide dog. Sometimes things come up. If I ever have an issue, who's the right person for me to contact? Right? And you do that in a friendly way. You take that down, and you've already got it down there, and it's there when you need it, and when you're upset, or when it's a crucial time frame for getting that information. Another thing people don't maybe don't think about is I'm a part of a lot of I don't do Instagram much. I think it's too picture focused, but I am a part of a lot of Facebook groups. So there's an it's called Uber Blind Users of Uber and Lyft. There's a group called iPad and iPhone tech users, things like that. Oftentimes people will complain about certain problems or issues, and in the comments they might say, well, I contacted this person, or this is how I resolved the problem. I contacted this person. I always take that stuff down. I put it in my contacts because I never know when I'm going to need it. And in fact, it was actually the source of a contact person or a contact email that I had. You'll hear about it later when it came down to Uber, my rideshare denials with Uber. So that's a good way of doing it, to doing it. Another way of getting contacts or something you can do before an issue comes up. I'm a huge fan. Please, please, please find out who your city council person is. Find out who your county supervisor is. Find out who your state senator and your state assembly person is. And of course, on the federal level, you want to get your representative and your two senators. And just put that information down after an election is finalized. Have it there, because you will find it to be critical when issues come up. If there is a city issue, you've got a problem with the Department of Transportation, the VTA, you have a problem with, like, for example, my theater is in San Jose, California, is run by, you know, the plays are run by a city organization. So when I couldn't find information about audio description for a particular play, I contacted my city council person. And you're their constituent. They're very motivated to just refer you over to the right department. Okay. And then you write in that correct department, so you have it the next time you need audio description for maybe a different theater. So I'm a big fan of using your city contacts. And so that's a really huge, important type of way of doing things. And again, it's sometimes funny trying to find the right title. You know, it could be client engagement specialist. It could be risk manager. It could be, you know, accessibility coordinator. And what I like to do is write down various titles of people and then search for them on websites to see if I can find that kind of thing, or go to LinkedIn and try to find what I can find. So I'm really all about trying to get that network as big as I can inside my contact list. So that's the start, a very practical thing. The next thing is you want to build your advocacy resilience. And that involves the emotional resilience that you need, as well as your style and your approach. The first thing I like to do to prepare is understand that advocacy is not easy. It can be hard. And so you want to make it as easy as possible. One of the things that I do to make advocacy easy is to find my posse of people that are good at advocacy and learn from them. Okay. And, you know, I'm an attorney, but I did not practice law in the disability area. Okay. And so even I had to come full circle emotionally with being okay with advocating for myself as a disabled individual, and also finding the people that that I could rely on to provide emotional support, and also importantly, knowledge. Okay, if you can find other people who have advocated for themselves, or they're complaining about a circumstance that happened, ask them, how did you resolve it? Who did you contact? What was the thing that made the whole process a success? Take down the name of their contact that they actually were able to get a successful result from. Okay, so being able to talk to others and engage in emotional support and in the exchange of ideas is super, super important. The other thing is to realize in the moment that you don't have to solve the problem immediately. If you go to a restaurant or if you're in an amusement park and things are not going well when you're trying to advocate for yourself and you're feeling like you're not on your game or you're just too upset to deal with, you're not going to get this resolved. Maybe it's too dangerous to deal with it in the moment. You can always go back to it later. You give yourself a day or two to process it and then start back up with it. Someone saying something?
I'm saying 5 minutes, just so you know.
Oh, gosh. So it's probably a good idea to write everything down when it happens, but you can always go back to it later. Another super important thing to do is develop your personal story and your personal style. Okay. Personal stories are important because those are the things that convince people to help you. Okay. Your personal story is going to include your blindness identity, and it's going to include the story of what happened. Okay. I can tell you, I might as well just go with Uber denials. I can tell you that many non-blind people are shocked when they hear this, these stories. Okay. And when they're shocked about it, they get indignant and just as upset as you are. Okay. And then your style is important because you may not be a super aggressive person. You may be more of a passive person. You can take an educational tone if you'd like, rather than an aggressive tone. All of those are okay, but it has to be authentic to you. Okay. And another thing to do is if you're unclear or uncertain or, you know, don't know how to get started, start with your family and friends first. In fact, you really should start with your family and friends. Build those boundaries and build that assertiveness with them. Get them on your side and get them to support you as you try to advocate in broader and broader and broader areas. There are so many different ways to advocate. You can advocate through your newspaper, advocate on social media, advocate on the federal level, advocate on the state level, advocate at your restaurant. But getting comfortable with it and having the support of your family and friends is such an important component to all of this. Finish with a little anecdote. When I first got Gideon, one of the first things I did was go out to breakfast with my son, who was probably about 24 at the time, who went to a restaurant. And as we were approaching, we were still outside and we had tables all around and people were eating. And I was with Gideon and I'd only been home for a couple of days. And another dog snapped at him. I was told later that the dog had a support animal or, you know, dog in training, but clearly the dog was not appropriately being trained and the dog snapped at Gideon. And I immediately, having just come off of training at Guide Dogs for the Blind, was very concerned and wanted to confront the person in the moment. But my son was like, oh, mom, just leave it alone. It's fine. Let's just go in the restaurant. He wanted to downplay it. And it really wasn't anything where he was embarrassed or anything. I mean, he knows who I am, right? But he needed to be educated. And so I sat down with him at breakfast and I said, here are all of the reasons why this is important. First of all, this guide dog is, you know, a very expensive investment by an organization that donated this dog to me. And if things go badly, it's possible that the dog can be, emotionally harmed to the point where that it can no longer work. And so by the end of the breakfast, of course, my son was completely on my side, and we chatted with the waitress and we chatted with the manager, and I actually spoke to the person who had the guide dog. So, you can practice that advocacy with your family and friends, and then you can get them over onto your side, and then they become advocates for you as well. I
Perfect.
know I should stop, so I will do that. I'll take any
Yeah.
questions that anybody has.
Yes, we have 5 minutes now reserved for questions before our next door prize. So, Steve, if you see any hands, I never know
We
what your.
have Bob Acosta.
Hi,
Yes.
Bob.
Hi, Linda.
Nice to meet you.
Great job. May I share an anecdote with you? I think it's advocacy. We were kicked out of a restaurant by dog, and they got all fussy. But fortunately, the guy was a sponsor on a restaurant show, a guy named Elmer Dills, who's very few passed away now. And I got on and told my story. And the owner was in Denver and got tons of support, emails or whatever, criticizing him. He got my phone number, called me, and said, "Come on down. I'm so sorry that my chef did that to you. I wasn't there." And we got a free dinner. The point of view is we networked, I think, Linda, without knowing it. We got the sighted crowd. We're going to win with our sighted friends helping us. Thank you.
That's, I mean, like sometimes getting the media involved. I've done that with Uber. Getting the media involved. Reporters are human too. They hear about this stuff and they're like, "What?" And I got the reporter's name because I had written an article in a different publication, and she had seen my article. So it builds on itself, right? So the more you get out there, the more the connections grow and grow and grow.
Okay, we have Roger.
Hi, Linda. I'm really glad to be here and to, as I say, get to sort of accept you and have you accept me as co-chapter members for the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind. I wanted to mention that there are some things that turn out from taking these advocacy steps that you talked about. For example, when I first lived in this condo years ago, we had a problem, a community problem with some violence or some whatever. Anyway, I don't remember what it was, but I got a hold of the mayor of Mountain View, told him about it, and he came to one of our meetings and brought the chief of police with him, which I thought was kind of cool. But the other thing that happened was that long after that took place, long after he was no longer mayor, he's now losing his sight, and he has me to depend on for helping him with that, with those ropes. So you never know. I've got to, got to use lawyers that I can use for my own things, from serving on committees with them and so forth. So it's all. There's all kinds of stuff happens.
Yes, and you can't be all things at all time, right?
Right.
And it's okay to pick your battles.
Margie.
Thank you. Hi, Linda. I'm Margie. Thank you for your powerful presentation. If you don't mind, may I add two more resources?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Please do,
Now, I
and
hope.
hopefully we can put them in the resource sheet that we spread out.
Okay, so I hope I'm not wrong that you did not say this one. I apologize in advance if you did. ASAP, Association of Service Animal Partners, I think it stands for. They have a 24-hour hotline. If you are being discriminated against, you can call that hotline and get pretty instant support.
So what's the name of it
And
again?
it's ASAP. Tony,
Okay.
you may want to come off mute and remind us what ASAP stands for. I want to see Association of Service Animal Partners, but Tony would
Oh,
know
the,
his
on
name.
the now on mute.
I can't remember the exact name. I know Marion Guisdala is the head of it, but
yeah, you can Google ASAP, and it will come up. He's in Florida, and anyway, the other person you really want to get to know in your city is your head traffic engineer.
Yes.
You can work with them on issues in the sidewalk, and you can work with them on issues of APSs. And then I just forgot there's one more. Oh, code enforcement. Code enforcement is really, really, really important. When you have sidewalk vendors and trees overhanging, those are great people to get to know.
And animal attacks, animal attacks.
Yep.
That kind of thing. I mean, Susan and I were talking yesterday about our experience with that whole traffic engineer thing, and I didn't have enough time to go into it, but yeah.
Hey, we have Nancy.
Hi, Linda. An excellent presentation. I've been denied with Uber and Lyft occasionally. I didn't use Ira or the app. I used GoGo Grandparent at the time, and the person just came. Their ride's been canceled, so they called me. They told me that I would never have to deal with that driver again. And then I had a medical transport. I was taking care of my friend, obviously before he died, and they would most of the time they accepted me on the medical transport with his medical, I think it was scan, and they denied me after a time, and I had to leave the dog at home, and he had to go to his appointment. But and then I let them know, but nothing was ever done. So I'd like to know what is the protocol. You know, I no longer have my dog, but what is the protocol that you used when you were denied with Lyft or Uber? Thank you.
Well,
is that a fair question?
The second half of the program is going to be dealing with my Uber experiences.
Oh,
and
okay.
It kind of goes beyond just the initial protocols, but I'll try to include that in my program.
Perfect. Oh. And this might be a good time, just in the interest of honoring the clock and the fact that another program is coming on tonight, to turn things over to Vita for a second door prize. If Vita, if you are so inclined, or if your
Echo
is so inclined.
Oh, sure. Why not? Well, hey, it never hurts to do a door
prize.
Is
there anyone new who has come in that didn't register?
I saw there's a 213 ending in 034. And there's also caller user one. So
this is Shirley,
I've come in there too, by the way. Hey, hello.
I'm sorry.
This is Shirley. I am the 213 number.
Okay, thank you. And who is the other person? 213?
I heard a gentleman, but I didn't hear good. He'd give his name. It came in.
The other gentleman was Joe Green.
Oh, he's
okay,
not
thank
he's
you.
Joe.
All right, thank you. Okay, Echo, we need a number between 1 and 34.
Number is 9.
Okay, we got 9. Let's see who 9 is. Margie Donovan. All right, Margie,
yay,
congratulations.
Thank you.
Amazon or Chewy, you can just send
Chewy,
me a note.
Chewy, Chewy,
that's
Chewy,
great.
Chewy, Chewy, Chewy.
Oh, love that Chewy. Thank you. Thank you, Susan.
Okay, wonderful. Congrats, Margie. That's great. We're now going to move on to the second part of Linda's conversation, where she will focus on when and how to file a small claims court application for denial of service for shared ride companies. And Linda, you have another 20 minutes, so have at it.
Okay, I need to answer, I think it was Margie's question about protocol, so I might add another minute. But In any event, I'll just start very briefly with what happened. Less than 6 months after I got Gideon, so in about November of 2023, I had a hair appointment about 6 miles away. And so I went to the end of my driveway and called an Uber. First driver, and this is important protocol. I communicated in the app that I was blind and I had a guide dog. Uber driver came, refused to take me. I told him it's a guide dog. You're required to. He said Uber pet. I said no. That's not allowed. He drove off, and I was automatically reassigned to another driver. So I again texted, said, I'm a blind, I have a guide dog. That driver just canceled, didn't even show up. Third driver was automatically assigned. I didn't have time, and I was emotionally distraught to even put in the app that I was blind with a guide dog. He showed up, and I argued with him a little bit longer because my appointment, I was about ready to cancel it because by now we're 25, 30 minutes in, and it's dark outside, again, upset. Told him he was violating the law. He said he didn't care. He had allergies, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he drove off. So I gave up, went in the house, and immediately typed in DOJ in my contact list. And in there, guess what? I had the information on the Department of Justice complaint form. And if you don't know what it is, it's ada.gov, and type in the search bar complaints for civil rights, and you'll come up with the DOJ complaint form. I also, at that time, and this goes into the protocols as well, went into the Uber app, went to the help section, went to the section about, I think it's discrimination, I don't remember exactly, and typed in my complaint. It was interesting. They brought up the last three rides, but they only allowed me to complain about one of the three rides rather than all three, because you had to check off a button. So I made clear anyway that it was I had just been denied. And then I also went into my contacts, found a separate email for Uber, and sent them a long, detailed explanation of what had happened. And frankly, sending that was great because it memorialized what happened for me, and I went back to that email frequently when I needed to be reminded what happened. So that's basically what occurred. I got nowhere with Uber. They offered $5 credits. They wanted to talk to me. They admitted, and this is important, they said, well, we talked to one of the drivers, you'll never be assigned to him again. Well, that's like basically saying, well, you know, my boss sexually harassed me. You're going to move departments and you'll never have to deal with him again. Well, you're still getting punished and the other person is not. And it's an admission that something bad happened. Okay. So anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit about the law in California, and it's important that, and I'm focusing on California because this is California Council of the Blind. You need to understand that California is the premier state to sue for ride share denials because of the procedures and the law in California. Okay. In California, we have the ADA, but the ADA doesn't really, that's a federal law, and it does not really cover getting monetary damages. Doesn't make it very easy to do that under the ADA. But under California law, we have a civil rights law called the UNRRA Civil Rights Act. You don't really need to know this other than every time you are denied a ride share because of your guide dog, you get a minimum of $4,000. If you succeed in proving that you were denied, you get a minimum of $4,000. And the reason that's significant is that you don't need to bring in proof of damages. You don't need to bring in proof of therapy sessions and the cost of the therapy sessions or the cost of the airport, maybe the plane ride that you missed, right? The change fee, which is $25 or $100 or whatever. You don't need to. It's a minimum of $4,000. Okay? So that's significant. And no other state in the United States has that. Colorado is next with a $3,500 minimum statutory damages. But after that, it drops precipitously. Okay? So we're lucky in California, and we should use it. The other thing about California that's great is that the small claims court system has two elements that helped us here. First, you can sue up to $12,500. Okay? If you go over that, you can't sue in small claims court. You have to sue in regular court. But that's a pretty high bar. Okay? Second thing is no attorneys are allowed. Okay? I'm not sure there's any other state that bars attorneys from small claims court. And the reason this is significant is, you know, you can have an attorney help you with your small claims court claim all the way up to the actual, I'll call it a trial, but it's really a hearing before the court. They can help you behind the scenes. But the reason it's significant is that means Uber also cannot bring an attorney. So they can't gum up the process by filing a lot of, you know, motions and making your life difficult and making arguments to the judge with attorneys that are going to overwhelm the process. They cannot show up with an attorney. So they have to bring some employee has to show up. And at my hearing, it was a paralegal. Okay. So anyway, I ended up suing in small claims court. $4,000 times three is $12,000. Okay. And plus the cost of filing the complaint. And I presented my case and I won. All right. I wrote an article about this process in the Blind Californian from last June, I think it was. And I believe we now have a link for it, and I will send that along with the resource list. But I'm going to give you some five takeaways from my experience. So the first takeaway is what I've already talked about is you don't need an attorney. Okay. So the process is relatively cheap. I would recommend having some sighted help to file the complaint in small claims court. Unfortunately, it can be a little bit confusing, but it's mostly just a form that you check off and you write your circumstances in there. You say that it violates this, you know, California law, and you're entitled to $4,000 times whatever, however many ride shares. One other thing about California law I want to throw in here is if you're with somebody, let's say you're using your Uber app or your Lyft app, you get the ride and you get denied because of your guide dog. Let's say your husband is with you. Well, he also suffered damage as a result of that rideshare denial. So he also gets $4,000. He has to file a separate lawsuit you can file them together, but they have to be one right after the other, right? Separate complaints or separate forms. But he also gets it because he is associated with you as a disabled person. So he can also sue. So it can get quite lucrative here, all right? So in any event, that's the first takeaway. The second takeaway, okay, one thing that some people have a misconception about, and actually Susan's husband, John, kind of gave me the light bulb in my head about this. I was talking to John one day at a restaurant about my Uber situation, and John said, well, we always, you know, I got denied, you know, a few weeks ago, but I don't have any photographs. I don't have any videotape, or I don't have screenshots. Well, technically, you really don't need that. Is it nice to have? Yes. Do you want to make sure you have that notification that you told the person that you know, you're blind with a guide dog so you can prove that happened? Sure. But it's not technically necessary, because when you show up in court, you're going to be under oath and you're going to tell your story. And that is evidence. Okay. Your testimony, your story, like I said before, personal stories are compelling, and that's going to be evidence. Okay. And one of the things that Uber doesn't have is Uber's not going to have the driver there. They don't want to have the driver there. Right. And they may have some paperwork about the investigation, and that's good, because you want to find out, well, okay, well, what happened to the driver? Did you discipline them? In my case, none of the drivers were disciplined. They were just given information about don't do this again, but then they, you know, were put back in the queue. That's significant. The judge didn't like that. Uber's legal argument. So, you know, generally Uber says two things. I mean, first, Uber always says, oh, we have a guide dog policy, and drivers are not allowed. And it says in our contracts with our drivers that they cannot deny people with guide dogs. Okay. And it says allergies, religious objections are not appropriate reasons for denials. Okay. It says it right there. But then on the other side, in the same breath, they say, you know, we have this policy, but we can't control the drivers. Okay. That's not a legal argument. Okay. The drivers are not independent contractors. And even if they were, the ADA and the UNRRA Civil Rights Act don't allow you to pawn off liability by characterizing people as independent contractors. Okay. Otherwise, no one would have employees. They would always just characterize everyone as an independent contractor and discriminate indiscriminately and get away with it. That's just not the way it works. But Uber makes this argument anyway. And it's very frustrating, because it gives the impression, well, if we make this argument everywhere and at all times, it's going to somehow succeed. Okay. But it's just not true. And they do control the process. They control the drivers where they go. They control the condition of the cars. They control the complaint process, they control the money exchange, they control everything. Sorry. So it's just not a factually true argument, and it's not a legally true argument. And then the final takeaway is also something I've already said, which is your personal story is so much more compelling than Uber's personal story. Uber doesn't have a personal story, but the idea, and if they say this to a judge, Well, our drivers don't have control over, we don't have control over our drivers, and it's within their discretion to take these people. It's kind of like, well, the next question is, well, so if somebody who's Black is wants to get a ride, it's not within your control to be able to enforce that? It's just not true. Okay? Their story does not hold water. And your personal story does. Inherent in your story is the emotional distress, the confusion, the distress of being late. Maybe it's dark and you're alone and you have no way of getting home. And of course, you're going to bring your guide dog to court, and that guide dog is going to sit at your feet, and that judge is going to see that, and they're going to be marveled at the whole thing. So those are my five takeaways. Finally, I've got some resources for you. I already told you about the Department of Justice complaint process. It's important to submit your complaint to the Department of Justice, because currently there is a lawsuit filed by the Department of Justice on behalf of all everyone who has been denied a ride share. I am listed in that lawsuit as one of the 23 representative plaintiffs. And this story appears in that complaint. My circumstances appear in that complaint. I can tell you the Department of Justice lawsuit has gone forward. Uber filed a motion to dismiss the entire case. The judge denied that motion in March. And they set it for trial for February 14th, 2028. And between now and then, there will be attempted mediations as trying to settle the matter. I'm not sure how it can be settled without really, in my mind, the way to settle the matter is to have some mechanism for drivers to be terminated after a first violation. Maybe a second, but I'm thinking a first violation. It's the only way to enforce and put Uber and put Uber's feet to the fire. And then a couple of other resources. I will put my email down on the resource list. I'm perfectly happy to talk to you. I am retired at this point. I'm no longer licensed to practice law, but I'm happy to talk about your presentation if you want to make if you want to file a claim. One other person I would refer you to is Tim Elder. Tim has been historically very involved in cases against Uber and Lyft. NFB, National Federation of the Blind, has a pilot program right now where Tim will represent people who have three rideshare denials, at least three rideshare denials, I think within a year. And if you want his, if you want to talk to him, his email is telder@trelaw.com. And I will also put his information on the resource list. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Linda. How thorough and articulate and concise and rich. Let's open things up for at least 5 minutes of questions.
Hey, we have Nellie.
Okay, good.
Hi, Linda. Thank you for your excellent presentation. I had a Uber denial a little over a week ago. It happened in another city and in California. And so I wonder if I were to file a small claims complaint in my city, or would I have to file it in the city where it happened?
Is it in the same county?
No.
Okay.
It's in Redlands, and I live in Santa Maria.
I think you can file it in your own count, in your own city, because Uber does business in all of the cities and counties, but I cannot be sure of that.
I see. Okay.
So I'm not sure how to respond. I do know that Tim Elder says that if he has a client come in and they have Uber rideshare denials in, like, let's say, three different counties, he can sue, and at least he can sue in one of those counties, and it's okay to bring in all three. But I'm just not positive of the answer. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Robert.
Yes, can you? Am I unmuted? I lost track.
Yes.
No, okay. You are.
Linda, outstanding presentation, and I'm going to submit, if you don't mind, your name to our national guide dog groups, because you've got to be heard all over. You're just wonderful. I have a question that's a little bit off. Well, it's on the topic. You can tell me. Uber says, and Lyft, I guess, they're not transportation companies. They're technology companies. Any thoughts just generally on that issue?
Yeah, first of all, the reason they're trying to say that is because the law says that transportation companies have to, you know, provide services to everyone. So they're trying to get out of that definition by calling themselves a tech company. And there have been legal cases that have come down that have considered that issue and rejected their argument. So it is not illegal. It's not legally sustainable. And I wouldn't say they are a tech company. They are a transportation company because they're putting drivers and riders together, and they control that process through their app. They control everything about it. They control the payment system. They control the complaint system. They control the vetting system for their drivers. They control the routes that the drivers take. It's, you know, it's another example. It's a great question. It's another example where Uber makes these arguments and everybody just believes it.
Thank you.
And, yeah.
Hey, we've got no more hands.
Well, Linda, this has just been a stellar presentation. I would add anecdotally, and this is not a question, that in one of my Lyft ride share denials, I was told by a Lyft representative that the driver's privileges had been revoked. I had no way of proving that, and I also don't know for how long they were revoked. I don't know if they were, you know, temporarily or permanent. I have no idea. And it was before I met you, and so and before we started learning about
this. You can still sue. Even if it's been revoked, you've already been harmed. You've already been rejected. You can still sue and get that $4,000. And if John was in the car with you, he can get some too.
Interesting. Well, but thank you. Thank you for that information. It's enlightening.
Margie has her hand raised.
Hi, Linda, again. A piece of information most people don't know, and it's quite scary. I'm on a couple Uber and Lyft driver Facebook pages, and it's very interesting, this topic out there. There are drivers who don't care and they're not taking a dog, period. But what's scary is, for lack of a better term, they have these computer hackers that they pay when they're taken off the platform, and they go through the back door, they're back on the platform. And that is very scary to me, because they could have been taken off for drugs, who knows? And Uber refuses to give that any attention. I brought it up to them at ACB. So
what you're saying is, mm-hmm. is drivers have some sort of way of getting themselves back on the platform when they've been banned?
Correct.
Okay.
You got it.
And I think I've heard that before. I don't know. I don't know the details of that and how it works out.
Well, I think it just shows how broken they are, because they're paying these people. And if assuming they're using their same names, they're paying these people, and there should be some kind of cross check there, you know?
And I feel like I've heard this before, and I'm probably pretty sure that Tim probably knows this. He's been monitoring.
Right.
Tim has been monitoring the DOJ lawsuit. He's been in communication with the Department of Justice, and so have I. I mean, we've all been interviewed very carefully by the Department of Justice attorneys before we would get mentioned in the lawsuit. And the lawsuit also covers wheelchair users, because Uber is famous for, you know, its drivers not accommodating wheelchair users. But I'll mention that to him, to Tim, again, and make sure, and maybe if I do talk, I'm sure I'll be talking to some Department of Justice lawyers. Try to get that included in the discussion with the Uber representatives when they're discussing the case.
So, and I just want to say this, to bring both of your presentations around to full circle and the importance of connection. So we've been dealing with this Uber Lyft situation for many years. And I took a very active part with GDUI in getting people to start filing DOJ complaints, and they're all getting the, you know, same old letter. One day I picked up the phone and I called one of the attorneys, who was interviewing people to begin with, Charlotte.
Yeah.
And I said, look, what's going on? Can you look into this? And she got together with her trial attorney, and that's when things started to move forward. That is not a brag. That's how important your connections are. And I've known Charlotte since I was 18. So there you go.
And with that, this brings our program to a close. Linda, we thank you so much, and we will help get the resource list distributed to everyone. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discussion on our Golden State Guide Dog Handlers list about this program, because so many issues get raised. And I'm sure it's going to be a live wire for quite some time. So thank you very much for presenting on both of these related and connected topics.
You have Leslie Ham with the hand up.
Oh, let's take care of it. Sure.
Okay.
Leslie, go ahead.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Leslie.
I have a question. I was with a friend who had who was blind and ordered the Uber, and twice they left because she doesn't have a dog, but I did. And I'm sure I know
that counts.
They pulled up, we know it, but we couldn't tell what was going on, you know, but nobody came. So they told us they were going to be there in a minute, and then they were just gone. So that,
did you say, did you put in a text that I'm here with a guy? I always recommend, you don't have to do this, but I recommend doing that. Informing the driver ahead of time that you're blind with a guide dog, because it is a written confirmation that you notified them of that fact. And if they thereafter don't show up or get denied, you can assume. I mean, first of all, clearly the first driver did not come because you got assigned a second one.
Yeah, first one said, well, what the thing is, she messaged them and said, can you let me know, I'm blind, can you let me know when you get here? And so he said, I'll be there in 2 minutes. And then, so both of, I mean, the first two both did that. They came up and saw the dog and left, because they both told us they would be there in, you know, 1 minute or 2 minutes, each yeah. one of them. And then we didn't hear a thing from them again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And if you were to pursue it, I would ask, did you complain? Did you make a complaint?
Yeah, at the time we did, but you know, it was her ride. So I didn't push it. So
yeah.
We got another ride. Eventually the third guy stopped and said, of course I take yeah. dogs, you know?
Yeah. So
we were stuck there, but I didn't know whether I should be.
You could have pursued it on your own.
Okay.
You could have.
And we've got two more hands.
It's wonderful. I mean, I want the two hands to be addressed. It's 5:16. When does the next group?
They don't start till 6. So
oh, they don't? Oh, wonderful.
I think we're good.
Then I'm delighted. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's please. Just try to make them brief.
Okay.
I thank right. you. Several of my friends over the years have been denied rides on Uber, especially from the East Bay Center for the Blind. And one of them lives in Florida now. Could she still sue for that, even though it was some years ago?
It's got to be, I don't know what the statute of limitations is, but it's probably got to be at least within 1 year and probably not longer than two. But I mean, if it's been quite a while, it's probably not.
Okay. This has been fascinating.
But
thank
again,
so
I don't, I'm not familiar. I'm not a licensed attorney and I can't really provide that kind of legal advice. But, you know, if it was 10 years ago, like it's not gonna, you know.
Thank you. It wasn't that long ago, but it's definitely not within the last 2 years. So thank you so, so much. This has been a wonderful presentation.
Hey, next up is Nancy.
Hi. I'll be brief, Linda. It was a very good presentation. I've been denied under this condition, but my dog got in and my dog was on the floor, but he started to get up on the seat. I said, no, I got him down. I had a towel. I could wipe, so I can wipe your seat off if you need me to. I did. And I was accepted. Now, if a dog is dirty or aggressive, can they refuse one for those reasons? And it's okay to, I mean, I want to make sure I had a little towel on hand or wipes if I needed to. If my dog did something he shouldn't have, you know, he got up on the seat, I stopped that from happening. Thank you. You know, I was accepted. I was taken during the
yeah meeting. I mean it's a good thing. It's a good practice to do it. It's not necessary, but it's a good practice. And it's funny, you know, the whole thing with the seat, you know, this isn't an Uber situation, but at one point my dog went up on the seat. He had never done that before. And I kept trying to bring him down to the, you know, the area behind the driver's seat on the floor. And we discovered afterwards that we couldn't do that because there was a purse back there, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, oftentimes things are going on that you're not aware of.
Tony had her hand raised.
Okay, thank you. I didn't mean to monopolize the conversation. Thank you, Linda.
Oh, the audio now unmuted.
Well, let her done. Tony had her hand raised and then she put it down. I'm not sure if that was a mistake.
That was a mistake. This is Tony. A couple of years ago, I got a Lyft ride from a driver who was crazy about my dog. And so I got her phone number. And when I knew I needed somebody in advance, I would call her and she would try to fit me into her schedule. So it really pays to sort of make friends with a friendly Lyft or Uber driver.
Sure. Yeah. But I would really encourage everyone to really think about pursuing a case, especially if you regularly get denied. And in the last year, you can count three times. It's $12,000 that you can get from Uber for those three denials. That's not an insignificant amount of money. And plus it puts Uber on notice. The more we do this, the more Uber is on notice that this is becoming a problem. I mean, it's a rampant issue. It's a matter of us taking up the baton and pursuing our rights.
Wonderful place to close. That's terrific. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for coming on the call and bringing such excellent and thoughtful questions. And just what a great afternoon this has been.
Susan, can I give away some money?
I was just going to ask if you wanted to do that. I'm thrilled.
Before people start leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, Linda, this has been amazing. I have actually learned quite a bit. And this is going to be on our website once they get all the pre-convention programs together. So it will go on our website. Okay, so this time we're going to give away $50. Yay. Echo, number between 1 and 34?
The number is 2.
2. So let me look to see who 2 was. Probably someone who came on early. Patty Nash. All right, Patty. Congratulations. Just send me a note if you want Amazon.
That's great, Patty. Congratulations.
Yay. And really, thank you all. And we'd love to have you in Golden State Guide Dog Handlers. We're a good working group, and we get things done. So join us.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Great. Good.
Thank you, everybody. I enjoyed it, too.
And thank Linda. You, Program Committee. Thank Susan, thank you were great.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Always is great.
It was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.